Commission activities. The Truth and Reconciliation Commission of Canada was established in 2008 under the terms of the Indian Residential School Settlement Agreement. The Commission was mandated to reveal to Canadians the complex truth about the history and the ongoing legacy of the church-run residential schools in a manner that fully documents the individual and collective harms perpetrated against Aboriginal peoples and honors the resilience and courage of former students, their families, and communities. And guide and inspire a process of truth and healing leading toward reconciliation within Aboriginal families and between Aboriginal peoples and non-Aboriginal communities, churches, governments, and Canadians generally. The process was to work to renew relationships on a basis of inclusion, mutual understanding, and respect. More specifically, the Commission was required to hold 7 national events to gather documents and statements about residential schools and their legacy, to fund truth and reconciliation events at the community level, to recommend commemoration initiatives to the federal government for funding, to set up a research center that will permanently house the Commission's records and documents, which the parties were obligated to provide to the Commission, thereby establishing a living legacy of the Commission's work, and to issue a report with recommendations. 3 commissioners were appointed in 2008. The Honorable Justice Harry Laforme as chair, and Jane Bruin Morley and Claudette Dumont Smith. They resigned shortly after being appointed, and new commissioners were appointed. The current commissioners, the Honorable Justice Murray Sinclair as chair, and Chief Wilton Littlechild and Dr. Marie Wilson, were appointed to replace them in 2009 by the parties to the settlement agreement. An Indian Residential School Survivor Committee provided advice and support to the commission. Its members included John Banksland, Inuvialuit from the Northwest Territories, John Morisseau, Métis from Grand Rapids, Manitoba, Eugene Arcand, Cree from Muskeg Lake First Nation, Saskatchewan, Madeleine Basile, a member of the Atikamekw Nation from Wemetoki, Quebec, Lottie Mae Johnson, Mi'kmaq from Eskasoni, Nova Scotia, Rebecca Uki Williams, Inuk from Nunavut, Doris Young, Cree from the Pas, Manitoba, Barney Williams Jr., Nucha Nolth from the Tlaoki at First Nations on Mears Island, British Columbia, Gordon Williams from the Peguis First Nation in Manitoba, now residing in Ontario, and Kukduka Terry Brown from the Raymond Arcand, a former chief of the Alexander First Nation near Edmonton, Alberta, served on the Survivors Committee until his death in November 2009. The Commission received continuing support throughout its mandate from the parties to the settlement agreement. Regular all-parties meetings were held to discuss opportunities and challenges that arose in fulfilling the Commission's goals. The Commission worked with the parties to address topics such as document collection, communications, public education, and survivor travel support for completion of the Commission's work. Representatives of the parties also took part in working groups at the national and local levels to support the Commission in planning and implementing its national and regional events. The Commission established its head office in Winnipeg, Manitoba, retained a small Ottawa office, and opened satellite offices in Vancouver, British Columbia, Hobima, Alberta, and Yellowknife, Northwest Territories. In recognition of the unique cultures of the Inuit and of their experiences and the impacts of residential schools on them, the Commission also established an Inuit Subcommission, 7 regional liaison officers were hired with advice from the IRSSC and were assigned responsibility to work in the following regions: Quebec and Atlantic Canada, Ontario, Manitoba, Saskatchewan, Alberta, British Columbia, and Yukon and the Northwest Territories. Meeting from coast to coast. During the 6 years of its operation, the Commission held events in all parts of the country. The largest and most visible of these were the national events held in Winnipeg, Inuvik, Halifax, Saskatoon, Montreal, Vancouver, and Edmonton between June 2010 and March 2014. The Commission estimates there were as many as 155,000 visits to the 7 national events. Over 9,000 residential school survivors registered to attend them, while many others attended but did not register. To augment this statement gathering, its statement gathering activities and to help build public interest and participation in its national events, the TRC organized regional events in Victoria and Whitehorse. It also held 238 days of local hearings in 77 communities across the country. The Commission also sponsored town halls on reconciliation at its Victoria regional event in April 2012 and at subsequent national events as a means to draw a greater number of visitors into conversation with the TRC about healing and reconciliation. Members of the general public were invited to come forward at the town halls to share information about what they were already doing to support reconciliation and to describe their ideas about what more needs to be done. Statement gathering. Until the Commission was established, the voices of those who were most directly affected by the residential school experience, particularly the former students, had largely been missing from the historical record. The Commission made a commitment to offer everyone involved with the residential school system the opportunity to speak about their experience. The Commission received over 6,750 statements from survivors of residential schools, members of their families, and other individuals who wished to share their knowledge of the residential school system and its legacy. Statements were gathered at public sharing panels and sharing circles at national, regional, and community events and at Commission hearings. They were also collected through private conversations with statement gatherers. The Commission also gathered statements in correctional institutions in Kenora, Ontario, and Yellowknife, Northwest Territories, recognizing the high rates of incarceration of Aboriginal peoples and how the experience of residential schools has contributed to the kinds of personal struggles that may lead to incarceration. Health support workers, cultural support workers, and or professional therapists were present everywhere the Commission gathered statements to provide support and counseling as needed. In an effort to understand all aspects of the residential school experience, the Commission also made a concerted effort to gather statements from former staff of residential schools. With the assistance of the church parties to the settlement agreement, the Commission conducted 96 separate interviews with former staff and the children of former staff. In addition, the Commission received statements from former staff and their family members at its national and regional events and community hearings. The statements gathered will form part of a permanent collection of documents relating to residential schools. Under the terms of the settlement agreement, the federal government and the churches were obliged to turn over relevant documents in their possession to the Commission. The Commission has had to overcome some significant challenges to completing this task and has had to seek court direction to resolve disputes with the parties about the handing over of documents. Once the Commission's document collection processes began, it became increasingly apparent that Canada would not produce numerous documents that appeared to be relevant to the Commission's work. First, the federal government declined to produce all relevant documents held in its national archives, Library and Archives Canada. Library and Archives Canada took a position that it was not required to organize and produce to the Commission up to the 5 million documents in its possession that were directly relevant to residential schools. Library and Archives Canada maintained that the settlement agreement required it to provide the Commission only with access to its archives. A lengthy process, which included the filing of written arguments, affidavit evidence, and court-ordered mediation between Canada and the Commission, culminated in a hearing before the Honourable Justice Stephen Gouge of the Ontario Court of Appeal, sitting as an Ontario Superior Court Justice, on December 20th and 21st, 2012. By judgment dated January 30th, 2013, Justice Gouge ruled in favor of the Commission's position that the terms of the settlement agreement provided that all relevant documents held by the Government of Canada, wherever they may be held, must be produced to the Commission. Following the ruling, the Government of Canada began producing documents from Library and Archives Canada to the Commission. Less than a year later, the Commission once again was required to go to court for judicial guidance respecting Canada's document production obligations. At issue were records in the possession of the Government of Canada from the investigation of the Ontario Provincial Police into abuse at the Fort Albany, Ontario Residential School in Ontario, also known as the St. Anne's School. The Commission had attempted to obtain the OPP documents from both the OPP and the federal government. Although the OPP did not respond to the Commission's overtures, it later took the position that it required judicial authorization to produce the records to the Commission, but it did not oppose disclosure. The Government of Canada, however, opposed production of the documents to both the Commission and to the lawyers for residential school survivors. The government took the position that it was barred from producing the documents because they obtained the documents from the OPP subject to an undertaking that it would not, in turn, disclose the documents to any third party. The Government of Canada further argued that it was not obliged to seek documents from third parties for disclosure to the Commission, and that any disclosure to the Commission of the St. Anne's records would amount to burdening the Government of Canada with this obligation. On October 18, 2013, the Commission filed a request for directions as to whether the Government of Canada was obliged to disclose the records of the OPP investigation of St. Anne's. After argument before the Honourable Justice Paul Perrell of the Ontario Superior Court of Justice on December 17th and 18th, 2013, the court ordered Canada to produce its documents to the Commission. Recognizing that Canada had only a subset of the OPP investigation documents, the court went one step further and ordered that the OPP produce all the investigation records in its possession to the Commission. Less than a year after Justice Perrell rendered his decision in the St. Anne's case, the Commission was faced with yet another document collection issue that called for court guidance. The documents at issue were records from the independent assessment process. The IAP The IAP is one of the components of the settlement agreement. The IAP is an adjudicative process for financial compensation to residential school survivors who suffered serious abuse at residential schools. And consequently, the body that administers the IAP process, the Indian Residential Schools Adjudication Secretariat, is in possession of a wealth of documents related to the legacy of Indian residential schools. The Residential School Settlement Agreement provides that survivors who go through the IAP can give their consent to have their statements and testimony archived with the archive created by the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation for future research. The intention was apparently to eliminate the need for a survivor to have to testify before an IAP adjudicator and then have to repeat the same story to the TRC. From mid-2010 to early 2012, the Commission engaged in negotiations with IRSAS to archive and preserve those documents. The parties' discussions focused on the development of a consent form for IAP claimants to sign during the IAP process. The consent form would bring or would explain to IAP survivors how their information would be shared with the Commission, and it would allow them to provide written consent to the sharing of their stories. The Commission had discovered that the IAP staff and adjudicators had repeatedly failed to inform survivors of their right to have their statements delivered to the TRC's archive, and instead had required an undertaking of strict confidentiality of all parties to the IAP hearings, including the survivors themselves. In June 2004, the chief adjudicator of IAP publicly announced that he supported the immediate destruction of all documents related to the adjudication of claims by residential school survivors. The Commission emphasized that the requirement of strict confidentiality imposed by RASAS was incompatible with the terms of the settlement agreement. Furthermore, the Commission stated that the destruction of some IAP documents would constitute a major loss for future generations of Canadians. The Commission and IRSAS were unable to come to an agreement as to the mechanisms for allowing the Commission to access the documents, and the matter was brought before Justice Perrell for direction. In the hearing held from July 14th to 16th, 2004, the Commission advanced the position that a notice program should be ordered by the court, which would allow IAP claimants to be notified that they may share their IAP testimony with the Commission should they so desire. The Commission narrowed the categories of documents it sought to preserve in recognition of the legitimate privacy interests of IAP survivors. The Commission argued that it sought only to archive the IAP applications, transcripts, and audio recordings from IAP hearings and IAP adjudicator decisions. On August 6, 2014, Justice Perrell delivered reasons in which he held that the IAP documents would be subject to a 15-year retention period, during which a notice program to survivors would be administered by the Commission or the National Center for Truth and Reconciliation. The precise parameters of the notice program would be decided by the court in a subsequent hearing. Importantly, Justice Perrell ruled that every copy of the IAP documents, no matter who possesses them, must be destroyed after the conclusion of the retention period if the IAP claimants do not consent to having the documents archived. Justice Perrell also directed that the Commission commence a further request for direction and return to court for a determination of the issue of the parameters of a notice program to inform survivors about their option to archive their IAP applications, the transcripts and audio recordings of their hearings, and the decisions with the Commission. The Commission has been entrusted to commence further proceedings to determine how to engage claimants in the exercise of ensuring informed consent on the issue of the fate of their records. Justice Perrell's ruling is the subject of appeal. The Commission feels strongly that any steps taken to ensure that the informed consent of survivors is obtained must be robust, culturally appropriate, and sensitive to the challenges of contacting survivors, some of whom cannot read, have problems speaking English or French, and reside in remote locations. the Commission believes that it is not enough that a notice simply be mailed to the last known address of survivors. A multifaceted and personal approach that actively engages survivors is required. The Commission strongly believes that survivors' stories must be preserved. The loss of these documents would be a blow to Canada's national memory of a significant historic injustice, could contribute to the possibility that future generations would never know of the abuses in residential schools, and could contribute to the argument of those who would assert that this never happened. The Commission intends to vigorously advance a position to prevent the destruction of the IAP documents without the informed consent of individual survivors.